So here's the story that is that has inspired the topic that I want to talk to you guys about and hear your stories about. And it's about fan letters. But this story is a little bit different than that. But I want to read the story, and then I want to get into whether or not have you ever written a fan letter? Have you ever written to a celebrity or an athlete or anything like that? And had you ever received anything in return? So that's sort of the thing that we're going to be talking about here. But this is the story. It's a 5-year-old Glenview baseball fan wrote every team asking for a pocket schedule, and the results have been delightful. When Mike O'Connor was growing up on Chicago's northwest side near Harlem and Foster Avenues, he collected baseball cards. He'd track their value in Beckett Baseball Card Monthly, which in its heyday had 1 million subscribers. Every so often, he'd part with an especially precious one. "I used to write the players and ask for their autograph," said O'Connor, who lives in Glenview now. "You'd put the card in a letter and mail it away, and hopefully you'd get the card back." In 1989, a good year for the Cubs, the team still had Mitch Wild Thing Williams. He'd be traded to the Phillies in 91, and O'Connor had his card. "That was a big deal to have him on a Cubs card. I mailed it away for his autograph, and I didn't hear back." 2 years later, the card showed up in O'Connor's mailbox, signed by Mitch Williams. "O'Connor showed me on Friday. It's still in the plastic sleeve." All of which brings us to 5-year-old Colin O'Miller, who is Mike's son. Colin O'Connor, who is Mike's son. Colin is a baseball fan and a baseball player. He just finished his first season with the Fireflies T-ball team. His favorite position, he told me with zero hesitation, is first base. "It's where all the action is," his mom said. Colin's aunt Kathleen, that's his mother's sister, lives in Cleveland. She's a huge Cleveland Indians fan, raised by huge Cleveland Indians fans. Colleen and Kathleen's dad worked in the ticket office for the Cleveland Browns. They grew up knowing and loving Cleveland sports. In the early spring, Kathleen mailed Colin a pocket schedule for the Indians. He loved it. He studied it. He memorized the game times. He learned the logos from various opponents, told his parents what time the Indians games were playing and what on what station. That got Colin's dad to thinking, what if they wrote letters to all 30 Major League Baseball teams like he used to do with the players? But this time they'd ask for pocket schedules. We talked about what he was going to write, Colleen, his mom said. She's also a first grade teacher. She said, "I wrote it. He copied it. The teacher in me was like, it's got to be nice and neat so that they can read it. And it read this: Hi, I am a big baseball fan. I am collecting pocket schedules of all the MLB teams for the 2018 season. Could you please send me one from your team? Thank you, Colin, age 5. Colin's dad looked up addresses for each of the Major League Baseball from each of the Major League Baseball website for each of them, and most, he said, listed the team stadium, and he addressed 30 envelopes accordingly and sent to the attention of fan services. They stuffed the envelopes with a copy of Colin's letter, plus a self-addressed stamped envelope, plus used postage stamps shaped like baseballs. They used postage stamps shaped like baseballs. We were curious to see what would happen with the Toronto Blue Jays. Mike O'Connor said, did we put enough stamps on? Can they mail it back using American stamps? They mailed the letters on April 10th. I was skeptical, Colleen, the mother said. I said, I don't know. Maybe we'll get 7 back. On April 17th, an envelope arrived from the Chicago White Sox. It contained a pocket schedule, plus some White Sox stickers and a letter thanking Colin for his baseball loyalty. On April 19th, he received envelopes from Colorado Rockies, the Baltimore Orioles, the Detroit Tigers, and the Kansas City Royals. On April 20th, envelopes poured in from the Chicago Cubs, the St. Louis Cardinals, the Los Angeles Dodgers, the Minnesota Twins, and the Tampa Bay Rays. Colin and his mom checked, created checklists, divided them into American League and National League, and wrote down the dates that they heard back from each team. Some teams simply sent schedules. Some teams sent temporary tattoos, magnet schedules for the refrigerator, and personalized letters. Some teams used the self-addressed stamped envelopes provided by O'Connor. Some used their own envelopes and postage. The Atlanta Braves sent an autographed photo of Blooper, the official team mascot. We have to look up Blooper. I want to know what Blooper looks like. The Cincinnati Reds sent Fathead stickers for Colin's wall. Daddy put them up in the closet, Mike O'Connor said, with a laugh, because Dad is a Chicago Cubs fan. The Boston Red Sox sent the biggest package of all: pocket schedules, rubber wristbands, stickers, a picture of Fenway Park, a tiny plastic bag filled with Fenway dirt. That's awesome. That is completely awesome. Even the Blue Jays managed to get a schedule to Colin using their own envelope with Canadian stamps, and it arrived April 25th. Which must have been enough time for Colin's local post office to have started spotting a pattern, because the team addressed the envelope to Colin, no last name, and listed his address with Lake in it instead of Lane. It was close enough because they know. Well, all these baseball things are coming in. It's been really fun, his mom said. Every day he'd get so excited to come home from school and check the mail. He learned there's no mail on Sundays, and he learned how to determine what city a letter was arriving from even before he opened it by reading the stamp where the stamp was canceled. This was the Rangers, he said, handing me an envelope. This was the Pirates. Colin's still waiting to hear from two teams. The New York Yankees, oh, of course. Of course he's still waiting to hear back from the Yankees. There's a shocker. And the San Diego Padres. The first letter they mailed to the Padres' Petco Park in San Diego was returned to the O'Connors. Mike O'Connor sent a second one using a different address for the team, and they're crossing their fingers. A family friend traveled to New York for work recently and brought back a handful of Yankee schedules for Colin, including one with Aaron Judge, one of Colin's favorite players on the front. Still, it would have been fun to hear from the actual team. Colin studies the schedules before bed. He takes his extras when the team send him more than one and gives them to his best pal, Decker. Before I left his house, Colin grabbed the family iPad and showed me how he set up a page of clocks to track time in various cities so he knows when all his favorite teams are playing. I asked which team he was going to watch in person. He said the Angels. He likes Mike Trout, their center fielder. So does my son, I told him. He's nuts about baseball, loves to play it, loves to watch it, and loves to tell me what the Cubs need to do if they're going to win the World Series. Colin went to his schedule collection and fished out three. He handed them to me to bring home to my son. A lovely display of kindness from a kid who's learning from the world with all its imperfection that it's still filled with it. So there you go. So I mean, what a great story. What a really fun story, and so cool. And of course, the Yankees didn't send him anything. I'm not surprised by that in the least. The Padres, they didn't send him anything either, but they're waiting. It was the original envelope was sent back. So anyway, that's really the first of all. The story is great. That story is just fantastic and outstanding. And the kid really clearly loves baseball, and is having a ball with this hobby and learning things. And I love the story. It's a great story. But the what I wanted to talk about was do fan letters ever pay off? Have you guys ever sent a fan letter? You know, to a celebrity or anything, maybe you did something similar, to what Mike did. What a great turnout just from a lark too. What would it be like to just send requests to, for pocket schedules? I love what Boston did. That's the coolest. A bag of dirt from Fenway. That's outstanding. Pocket schedules, rubber wristbands, stickers, a picture of Fenway Park, and a tiny plastic bag filled with Fenway dirt.
And that's like nothing to them.
Yeah.
You know?
But it's a big deal to the kid.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Yes. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
So now everybody else has to up their game.
Well,
maybe
yeah.
He's got to write him back saying, hey, look what I got from these guys.
Yeah. I think he's happy with whatever he gets.
Probably.
But yeah, and Dan, of course, the detail on this story that is not shocking to me is that the Yankees didn't send him anything. That's not a surprise at all to me. New York Yankees didn't send a 5-year-old kid anything.
Those Steinbrenners.
Dan, can you look up the Braves mascot? Because I just want to see what he looks like. His name is Blooper, because the Atlanta Braves sent him a schedule and a picture of Blooper. I would just like to see what Blooper looks like. Maybe I can find him on my computer.
Fans react to the Braves' new brand.
Oh, is he new? He's a new Blooper? He's a new
introduced,
mascot?
Looks like 2018. Yeah.
Oh.
They introduced him at Chop Fest.
What? Oh, Chop Fest.
Which a event at, held before the season started. He's a woolly man.
I'm looking at him.
Yeah, he kind of looks like the,
He's pretty ridiculous looking.
Yeah, the Fanatic, but just, like, covered in...
He's covered in fur. He
tan
does,
hair.
He does have the ears of the Fanatic.
Right.
You know, he's got those weird sort of horn, megaphone-shaped ears.
And based upon what I can... This is just a hypothesis, of course, but it looks like in the ears are, like, those things that when you blow on them, they go out and come back in, you know,
oh,
like the
streamer
noise maker.
Things.
Yeah.
Yeah, noisemaker streamer things. Okay. He is also... There's one picture of him with a giant tomahawk,
mm.
Which makes him look a little scary. So that's Blooper. Now,
like Clark, he does not wear pants.
No, he does not wear pants. And the Philly Fanatic, they may be related. And the Philly Fanatic, by the way, also does not wear pants. A lot of the mascots don't wear pants. They can't be bothered.
I mean, if you could go without pants.
Of course.
The second line of this article, Blooper, who resembles a more tamed version of the Philly Fanatic, popped out of the machine to the applause of the mostly young crowd.
So that was the introduced Blooper to the... Now, why would you... I don't know why... Well, I guess it's a funny name, but do you want to name him after, like, an unimpressive hit? Is that something you want to do? You know what I mean? You don't when you go up to bat, you don't aspire to hit a blooper. So,
you know, Nick, I've got it for you. You know, this kid got the schedules, but I know how much you love costumed mascots.
I do.
You should write to each team to get an autographed picture to you of each of their mascots.
Yeah, I don't have that.
Dear
kind of,
Nick,
I don't have that kind
my
of time.
Best friend.
Yeah, listen. I'm fine. I'm fine. You know what? I'm fine with mascots. You know why? Because I have several pictures of me and Tommy Hawk.
Well, that's all.
That's
yeah.
I'm fine.
Okay,
I'm fine.
Well, and the amount of JoJo paraphernalia we have in our office, people think that he's the third member of the crew.
Yeah, we've got JoJo stuff. I brought it in. There's a picture. We have a framed picture of me. In the JoJo eye, with my face in the JoJo eye, from
one of the stores,
from my store, yeah, Irving,
oh yeah,
Gansett.
Over by you, yeah,
and then I got the Jewel, the JoJo bobblehead that the that the GM of Jewel personally sent me.
Wow!
Because of all the publicity I was giving JoJo and all the love that I was throwing at JoJo, and the fact that I shop at Jewel. I mean, I was just there. Right. My parents and I were just there yesterday doing our biweekly shopping, and. And my dad got me a plush JoJo doll,
sweet.
Which is standing next to the computer in our office. So we are awesome. JoJo is well represented in our office. It's like, because I brought in all the stuff. Dan, bring some stuff in to put in the office.
I know. It's funny because I was talking to our boss Stephanie about. She's just like, "Oh, I left this in the office," and I'm like, "You know, I don't think I've stepped foot in our office since the day we walked in."
You have
just,
not.
Just because we get here and it's like, "All right, let's go. We got to get stuff done."
Right. Yeah, you do your pre work. You need like a functioning studio,
right? I need a board. Route audio through and
yeah.
things like that.
And that's not. We have a computer in there and some other stuff. And I can do pre work from there. I can print stuff up from there that I need to do. But now, you know, we're the only ones basically using D now, Studio
right.
D.
Right.
So I can get in here, set up my board, get everything all set the way I want, and then go back to the office to do, you know, like printing or any kind of prep. So I've got, you know, we got that. And I get to sit by JoJo, which always makes me happy. I get to look at JoJo while I'm prepping.
But there's space in there for the two of you.
Yeah.
And you've already got your space all done.
Well, no, the desk is split into two.
Uh-huh.
Dan's on one side and that wall is bare.
Well, Dan, get on it. Will you?
The desk is empty and the wall is bare. So anyway, all right. Well, so all right, we got a break here, but here's the question. I mean, this story, by the way, I love this story. It's just really one of the coolest and fun stories that I've read, you know, all summer. And I love the baseball teams for doing that. And of course, the Yankees are the villains of the piece, which is not a surprise. But we want to take a break and we want to talk about fan letter experiences for you. Have you ever written a celebrity? Have you ever written somebody, an athlete, a hero? Have you ever written a team? What has been your experience in the past by sending fan letters, which I don't think people do very much anymore because of, you know, emails and Facebook and Twitter and all that kind of stuff. But I've sent some fan letters in the past, and I've got some interesting responses, and I'll tell you about those. But we want to hear you. 312-981-7200. Hey, is this from the 80s? I just can't figure it out. Dan, can you figure it out? Is that... Okay, it might be from the 80s.
I'm just guessing.
Oh, man. It's two for Tuesday. Yeah, man, two for Tuesday. Two of them on Tuesday. One artist, two songs. Get them in now. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Ike in Country Club Hills wanted to hear a little Robbie Neville, who just had one hit. And that was Since When. All right. I don't remember that. And I had the album, and I don't remember that song. So, anyway. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Hanging out with Blooper from the Atlanta Braves. I can't believe the Braves didn't have a mascot until... Well, maybe they had an offensive mascot. Did they have an offensive mascot?
No, you know, but they have that the dude, the Biofreeze or whatever his name was.
Oh, the scary-looking dude, right?
Yeah, the really fast guy that races you.
That's right. That's right. Didn't somebody beat him this season?
Somebody did beat him, I think, but there was that hilarious one of the guy who was beating him and then got a little too big for his britches and slowed down, and
yeah.
Biofreeze came back
and got him. Right. I love when that happens in a football game, when somebody gets cocky when they're going into the end zone and they're like 5 yards away from the end zone and they go, and then they fumble. That's always, I love that. And that's happened many times. You see these cocky guys getting, you know, they're 10 yards away and they start to walk or something. And then maybe they get slammed. So, all right, here's the deal. We just heard this pretty delightful story about this 5-year-old kid whose family wrote a bunch of letters to all of the Major League Baseball teams asking for pocket calendars, and they got responses, lovely and fun responses, from all but two, the Padres, who they're still waiting on, and of course the Yankees, who they could wait until hell freezes over, and they won't get anything from the New York Yankees, because the New York Yankees hate children. That's what it comes down to. So, but that we wanted to open up the phone lines and the text lines to you guys about fan letters. Have you ever sent out a fan letter? Had you ever gotten a response? What are some of the fun stories that involved? Maybe you sent out a fan letter when you were a kid, and you know, so on and so forth. We want to hear if you've ever what's happened there. 312-981-7200. This is Jim on WGN. Hi, Jim.
Hello. How you doing?
All right.
I sent a picture of Bobby Hull. I had. When he was a rookie,
mm-hmm.
signed the wrote me back a letter, signed the picture for me, and sent me his rookie card.
He's the best, man. Bobby Hull is the best. You know,
and also, I collect baseball schedules, pocket schedules. I got them from years back. The Yankees never sent me one.
Oh no.
And you know who hasn't sent me one for the last 2 years?
What?
The Chicago Cubs.
The Cubs haven't sent you one in 2 years?
You're right.
Yeah, you see what happens when you win the World Series, Jim? You get too big for your britches and you can't send somebody a schedule.
Yeah, so, I'm a baseball card collector and I collect schedules. I even got a schedule from the Cucamonga Quakes.
Oh, sure. That's great. Hey, by the way, Jim, you might want to tune in Friday morning because Michael Osaki is going to be here. He's an appraiser of baseball memorabilia and a baseball card collector himself. And if you have any questions about some of the stuff that you have, if it's worth anything, Michael can help you out. He'll be in here right at the top of the show, like 1:15 on Friday morning.
Yeah, my collection goes from 1951 on.
Oh, you should call in, Jim. Seriously, call in on Friday morning when Michael's here, okay?
Okay.
All right, Jim. Thanks, buddy.
Nice talking to you.
Okay, buddy. Take care. That is hilarious that the Yankees did not send him. That is hilarious. Dan, is that not hysterical?
Yankees.
This guy's been sending requests for years, and the Yankees have never sent him one. This 5-year-old kid sends a request. No, we're the Yankees. You got to buy it. You have to buy a pocket schedule, and it's $53. Non-refundable, and you may or may not get it because we're the Yankees. All right, fan letters is what we're talking about. And if you tried to send stuff away for the Yankees and you didn't get anything, let us know. All right, we'll take a break. The news is up next. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. 18 stories hovering. Well, we're not hovering. We're actually in a building. But we're 18 stories above downtown Chicago, and we are here in Studio D, Studio DiGilio, as they like to call it here. we'll be here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. You program the bumps we play every day, and there's a different theme. Today is Two for Tuesday. So 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. 630 area code made that request. That's Dropkick Murphys with The Boys Are Back. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. How are you, everybody? So we I just told you about this story about this five-year-old kid who he and his family rode away to every Major League Baseball team. Requesting pocket schedules, and they mostly received wonderful things from, you know, the baseball teams, except, of course, the Yankees. And so that was a really fun response to fan mail or to fan letters. We would love to hear from you if you've ever written a fan letter. So it's 312-981-7200 is the phone number. So, Dan, let's start with you. Did you ever write a fan letter when you were younger?
I did have to. It was part of a class. I wrote a fan letter to a show we've talked about in the past, Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego? It was on PBS. For people who are not familiar with the plot, Carmen Sandiego was a world-traveling thief, and there were various clues set up, and you learn geography and things about different nations via the adventures in trying to capture her, and they had a wonderfully bad but wonderfully awesome a cappella group called Rockapella, who would sing you clues. So I just love the show, and so I sent a letter to the TV station in Boston that produced it, and they did send back a couple stickers and a letter thanking me for doing that. So was pretty cool.
Is that the only one that you've ever
sent? Yeah, that was pretty much the only one I can remember sending. So,
Are you there,
yeah,
Roger?
Yeah.
Did you ever send a fan letter?
No. Never. No, I just sat in front of the TV set as much as possible, and that was my fandom. I relished being able to see the people that I enjoyed on TV or with the radio under my pillow late at night and listening to my heroes on radio and then spending a lot of time at the movies.
I did all of that as well.
Yeah, but as long as I got to see the people I liked and there wasn't any star or sports figure that I went gaga over, when I went to the baseball game and saw the Cubs and saw Billy Williams and Ernie Banks and all those guys, that was my being close enough to see them. And so I never really fawned over anyone deeply enough where I wanted to communicate with them.
I'm trying to remember the first fan letter that I sent, and I want to say it was Ray Rayner. I'm pretty sure the first fan letter I sent was Ray Rayner, because I loved Ray Rayner. And, you know, I sent him a fan letter, and, of course, they sent back all kinds of stuff. There was a 8x10 of him, an 8x10 of Cuddly Dudley, and they were all autographed, and there were all kinds of – it was really in a lovely letter, you know, that was signed by Ray. And that was a big thing for me because I watched him every morning. And that was pretty cool that I heard back from – I wrote to Garfield Goose, and I got a picture from Fraser Thomas and Garfield Goose signed. So those were two big ones. I mean, it was local, but they were big. I also wrote to Bill Jackson BJ
and Dirty Dragon.
The Dirty Dragon. Yeah. And I wrote to Bill Jackson, and he sent me back some artwork and some drawings and a picture of him and the Blob, And so that local stuff.
Yeah.
Was, you know, they were very kind in what they did. I've gotten fan mail, which is astonishing to me.
Well, I have too.
It's just ridiculous.
I've gotten a couple people who have written asking for a photograph, photograph, and I'm like, I don't have any photographs. Oh. You know, like a publicity photo.
Right, right.
I don't have that. I said, what do you want my signature? First of all, you can't read my signature. I don't write neat.
People like to have, you know, memorabilia from people they like. I mean, I'm going to this flashback convention, and there are a bunch of horror people that I want to get pictures with and autographs. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just happen to be, I like to get autographs and memorabilia. And that's another thing that's hanging up all over our office.
That is true.
It's like
people know what office is Nick's. That's for sure.
That's true.
It's like me and Freddy Krueger and a bunch of other people, and then like autographs from other people that I've met over the years, and so you know I'm looking forward to that. But Yeah, no, I've sent people, you know, photos and stuff because I do have a publicity photo here.
This is really weird. I don't know if it's weird or not, but I think it is. I've talked to you before about my dear friend Gloria Jean that I used to work for, the Gloria Jean's Gourmet Coffee
right.
Company. Used to be their advertising and public relations director. So she was my boss for many years. And she loves listening to WGN and listens to me on the weekends. And she asked me for a signed picture, photo.
It's weird when that happens.
And I'm like, wait a minute, you were my boss.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, we're friends now, but still.
No, it's weird when that happens. I've had teachers from the past want autographs. And I'm just like, wait a minute, you gave me a D. why am I going to... Why do you want my autograph?
Yeah, right.
So, but yeah, no, it's weird. But the some of the stories that I have some stories about sending fan mail. I mean, that's the local celebrity guys. Mm. Oh, Jerry G. Bishop is another one. I sent him a letter and he sent me back.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what though. Seriously. Well, one of the biggest thrills, to this day, and it was probably 48 years ago, maybe 47, 48 years ago.
Wow. Time.
I was watching Svengoolie, and this is Jerry G. Bishop, the original Svengoolie. Mm-hmm. I was watching Svengoolie, and he wished me a happy birthday.
No way.
Yeah, and I lost my mind. I remember, like, screaming. And my, you know, because I'd written a letter, you know, my parents helped me out writing a letter. So mm-hmm. my birthday is July 6th, blah, blah, blah. And it was right around my birthday. It wasn't on my birthday, but it was right around my birthday. And he wished me a happy birthday. And I lost my mind.
Oh, my God.
And so, you know, well, you know, now when Rich does those segments, thank right. you for all those cards mm-hmm. and letters. When he does that, I always love it because I love to see, like, the pictures of the people wearing the Svengoolie shirts.
Sure.
And,
sure.
you know, he always showcases like some of the little artwork that people do, like if they draw like a picture of him, and it's like a 6-year-old kid who draws like a cartoon picture or a mm-hmm. you know, a Crayola picture of Sven, and he shows that's got to be a thrill for those kids.
Oh yeah,
I mean,
oh,
a real gosh, real yes. thrill, because when Jerry G. Bishop said my name on TV, I was like you know mm-hmm. fantastic.
Yeah, in doing what I do, and I've been blessed to be able to do what I wanted to do as a kid, and that's be in broadcasting. Two events were like almost as good as sending a letter and having someone read it on the air.
Mm-hmm.
You are part of one of them.
All right.
The first, when I worked in Las Vegas, and I covered Jerry Lewis because his Labor Day telethons were from out there.
Right.
And he would always hold press conference. And I actually got into the war room one time where all the whole show was put together in the huge wall filled with all the different segments, different colored
right.
papers and stuff.
Right.
And I told you about that. And one day he and I were talking about the Shure microphone offices and factory here, and that he had just come to visit Chicago. I had told him I was from Chicago, and he gave me the photograph that you now have.
Right.
The other one was at one of Ron Sano's walkathons along
yeah.
the lakefront.
Yeah.
And, you know, he in his later years, he would only go to one. And he had many different locations.
He would try and go to all of them. I mean, seriously,
right.
like, he was a maniac. Ron was a maniac, and he wanted to visit all of them. Sometimes he couldn't. Sometimes
right.
he just physically and in time responding couldn't. But he wanted to visit every single location.
Oh, of course. And,
yeah.
and to be there for people.
Right.
And so he was at the lakefront one time, and I was helping at the WGN booth. And he came by after he had already spoken to the crowd and got him off. He went over to the booth, sat down, and signed autographs for over an hour. And I just stood there and waited and waited. And as he was getting ready to leave, I told him how much my mother had loved him. Obviously, I was a fan, but that she had, you know, recently passed away from her cancer. And we talked for a while, and then we took that picture that I post on Facebook every so often, with him and I standing there with our arms around each other. And those are the two, if I could have written a letter, a fan letter, those are the two moments.
Well, all right, that makes sense. Yeah. So the other thing about Ron was Ron would not leave until every hand was shaken and every autograph was, yeah, was given. He was, that's the kind of guy that Ron was. He was an amazing guy. Well, let's see. Let me read a few texts here before I give you. I have a few fan letter stories besides the local stuff that I mentioned. Jill says, we went to spring training and ran into Mitch Williams as he was at his car. He told us he was just traded but still signed our baseball card. Also, my mom loved Michael Jordan and sent him a condolence card, and he sent a nice letter back. Mitch Williams was just traded.
Wow.
Before the Phillies, and he still signed. The thing about that is, you know, I was rooting for the 93 Phillies. You remember what happened, Dan? 93 Phillies?
Yeah.
I was rooting for the 93 Phillies, one of my favorite teams in baseball history. A bunch of slob, drunk goofballs who had no business going to the World Series, and they lost. You know why?
Joe Carter.
Mitch Williams gave up a home run to Joe Carter. Never forget that. And of course it was Mitch Williams. Of course it was. Pat from Joliet says, not sure if this is considered fan mail, but on Home Improvement, when Tim would say something offensive on Tool Time, Al would hold up a sign with an address. My dad wrote to the address and received autographed photos of both Tim Allen and Richard Carr. I didn't, was that the deal, if you would write to that address?
I guess so. That's pretty,
pretty
great.
That's pretty
cool. I love when movies and TVs do that. They have got a phone number, and they actually, like, when you call it, it's something tied in with the movie or TV.
Listen, you know
when,
you know Magnolia.
I do. Yes, I do.
Magnolia, two phone numbers in Magnolia. The 1-800 Tame Her, or which was the seduce and destroy system by Frank J. Mackey, which was Tom Cruise's character. If you called that number back when, I don't know how long, you know, Paul Thomas Anderson or the film company New Line owned it, but it was a while. It was a while the movie was in theaters. If you called that number, you got a tape recording of Tom Cruise telling you about the seduce and destroy. And then the other one was the, because when Philip Seymour Hoffman is at Jason Robards' house, because he's his nurse, and he's, you know, Jason Robards is dying, and his dying request is to reunite with his son, who is Tom Cruise. He's trying to get a hold of Tom Cruise. So what he does is he orders some stuff from a drugstore, like a grocery store. So he orders like peanut butter, cigarettes, and bread, and then porno mags. And it's because he orders like Hustler and all this stuff, because Tom Cruise runs this seduce and destroy thing, and the ads are going to be in these porno mags. So that's why he wants to get a hold of him. He wants to get the number to call. So it was really funny, because the woman who's on the other end, like when he calls the drugstore, and he goes, yeah, I'd like some bread, some peanut butter, some cigarettes. Do you have Penthouse magazine? And the woman on the other end is like, yes, we have Penthouse magazine. He's like, okay, well, I'll take one of those. And Hustler, do you have Hustler? And she's on the other end. She's like, yes, we have Hustler. And he's like, okay, I'll take one of those. Is that all? Yeah. Do you still want the peanut butter bread and cigarettes? He goes, yes, all indignant. But anyway, they have to have, he gives her the phone number, the Jason Robards. And so I wrote it down and I called it. And I swear to you, it was a regular phone number. They didn't do, because Paul Thomas Anderson doesn't do the 555 thing, because it takes you out of the movie. So he doesn't do the 555 thing. So it was a real phone number. So I called it, being the geek fan of that movie that I am. I called it when the movie was out, and it was a voicemail of Julianne Moore saying, I can't talk right now. I have to leave. Beep. And it was Julianne Moore. And they bought the line. And I thought that was the coolest thing that, you know, ever. But that's so funny. The Tool Time guy's writing you back. All right. We'll take a break. We got a whole bunch of texts coming in. Fan mail, fan letters, responses, all that stuff. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Welcome back, everybody. Two for Tuesday. Yeah, man, two for Tuesday. There's two Tuesdays and two. That's one artist, two songs. Get your requests in now. 630 area code requested the Dropkick Murphys with Fields of Athene. And there you go. Welcome back, everybody. Okay, we are talking about sending fan letters, and if you've gotten a response, and have you ever sent any fan letters in the past, all from this really great story about this kid who he and his family sent letters to every Major League Baseball team requesting pocket calendars, and they've got a lot of great responses, and you know, it varied from other really cool things and nothing from the Yankees. We're talking about fan letters. We got some more texts coming in. We'd love to hear from you with your stories as well. 312-981-7200. 630 area code says, in 1984, I was 11 years old, and I wrote to my favorite Cubs players. I got autographed pictures from Ryne Sandberg, Rick Sutcliffe, and Jody Davis. In 1985, before the NFL season began, I wrote to Walter Payton. He wrote me back on Studebaker's letterhead, that's his nightclub, and sent an 8x10 autograph photo. That's cool. 765 area code says, I wrote Stevie Nicks a fan letter in 1982 when I was 17. She's the only celebrity who ever responded. She sent an autographed picture and a personal note. All right, good for good Stevie Nicks, man. I'm assuming she couldn't see through all that gauze, but she did send a nice letter. Joanne says, I've written three fan letters over my life: Marie Osmond, Bill Gates, and Drew Carey. I got no response from Marie, an autographed picture from Gates, and a personal note and picture from Drew Carey. That doesn't surprise me at all. Drew Carey seems like the kind of guy that would write a personal note. Now, Dan, you know this great story about Drew Carey, right?
I do know the story.
I don't know, Roger, I don't know if you know this story or not.
No.
It involves Dean Richards and Drew Carey?
I don't think I heard
this. Okay, well, let me quickly tell you this, because this is a great WGN story.
All right,
so Dino's doing his show on a Sunday morning, and a guest bails. And I can't remember who it was. I don't remember who it was, but it was a guest that was probably going to do two segments at least. And he bailed. And this person bailed. And Dean's not real good when people bail on him.
Yeah.
Dean's not real good about that. So he was not happy. So he said on the air, and he actually mentioned who it was. I still don't remember who it was. They bailed, and I got nothing for these segments thanks to this unprofessional person who bailed on me. And then he flippantly said, if there are any celebrities listening right now, call in. And that was just a joke. They come back for commercial. Drew Carey calls in.
What?
Drew Carey calls in. Now, this was at the time when WGN was being simulcast in Disney hotels. WGN had like, yeah, they had like an exclusive deal where, you know, like in a Disney hotel, if you turn the radio on, you would hear a feed from WGN. And so that was the deal. So Drew Carey was staying in a Disney hotel. Turned the radio on, heard Dean Richards say that, you know, his guest bailed on him. And so Drew Carey called in and did like a half an hour with him.
Amazing.
Yeah. That's Drew Carey. That's the case, because that's, you know, so that's why it doesn't surprise me. I think Drew Carey just seems like that kind of guy. So Ann says, my daughter wrote to Sarah Hughes, Olympic figure skate champion, and she got an autographed picture and a nice letter. There you go. So I wrote to Jamie Lee Curtis because obviously she was, you know, like still is my major league crush. Like when I was in high school, when I was like eighth grade, it was all about Jamie Lee Curtis. From the moment I saw Halloween, Jamie Lee Curtis became my number one all-time biggest insane crush. So I sent her a fan letter, and I got an autographed 8x10 back. This was around 84, maybe, something like that, and I got an autographed 8x10. So here's the, and so I had it, I framed it, and I put it up in my room, and I, you know, and it was there, and I was like, oh, Jamie Lee Curtis. So because of the lucky business I'm in, I got to meet Jamie Lee Curtis. Roy, she came in to do Roy's show. She and Catherine Bigelow, the director, who would eventually go on to do Hurt Locker and Point Break and all those other movies, she directed a film called Blue Steel that Jamie Lee Curtis was the star of. It was a thriller where she played a cop. So she comes to the studio, and I get a picture with her and Catherine Bigelow and Jamie Lee Curtis. You know, Roy went out of his way to let Jamie Lee Curtis know how much I loved her and that I had a massive crush on her and all this other stuff. So she was like very touchy-feely and kissed me and was hugging me. Very embarrassing, but awesome at the same time. And so I got to interview her and I met her and everything. And then so we were in during a commercial break. And this ties in with when I wrote her the fan letter. And so during the commercial, I was like, you know, I wrote you a fan letter. I don't know, maybe about 8 years ago. And I got a nice response back. I got a headshot from you, an autographed headshot. And she goes, "Yeah, that wasn't me. That was my assistant."
Oh no! Oh, well, you know they got people.
Yeah, she goes, "No, that wasn't me. That was my assistant." Oh no, you know what I did? I asked her. I said, "Was that really you?"
Oh, okay.
I said, "Was that really you?" And she said, "No, that was my assistant." And I'm like, "That's all right. Don't worry about it. I got a picture of you anyway." And she's like, "Well, now you got a picture with me, and you get this." And she kissed me on the mouth. So, and I got her autograph. She autographed, you know, like, you know, a thing from Halloween. She autographed an 8x10 from Blue Steel. So, and I know that was her real autograph because, you know, I was standing there when she wrote it.
Right.
And then I go home and I check the autograph against the 8x10 that she sent me, and it wasn't even remotely
close. Oh, no.
Her assistant didn't even try to duplicate. Didn't even try to duplicate her,
that's horrible.
Her autograph. Well,
they've got machines that can do it.
Yeah, well, I don't know. But anyway, hey, listen, she admitted
still.
It. She's like, no, it was my assistant. I'm sorry. And I'm like, I don't care. You know, it doesn't matter. I'm sitting in a room with you right now. You've been flirting with me for 20 minutes.
So. Now, when you got the original letter or the autograph,
it was
did
just
you
an autograph. I didn't know. I was like, well, this might not be real. But it was a picture of Jamie Lee Curtis, which made me happy. And that was basically enough. Like, oh, it's another picture of Jamie Lee Curtis that I can hang up on my wall. So, but anyway, I thought that was really funny. Like 8 years later, she's like, no, that was, I'm sorry, that wasn't
that's
me.
Funny.
And then, but the picture that, you know, that I have, the picture of me with between Kathryn Bigelow, who is a stunning woman and one of my favorite directors of all time, and Jamie Lee Curtis is ridiculous. The look on my face is like, I look like a... It's ridiculous.
Hello, lady.
Exactly. My parents have it, they have it framed on their living room wall.
You got to make a copy and put it up on your office window.
I don't know about that. Well,
maybe
on the office window where anybody, just people who work here get to see it. That maybe.
That's all right.
All right. All right, we're going to take a break. We got more fan letter stuff to talk about. The news is up next. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. Paul requesting sticks with a crystal ball. Sorry to laugh, but it sticks. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are back, and we're here till 5 a.m. There is a new game show. By the way, Dan, I really don't think we're going to get to the weird tradition in each state.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
I'm just going to hold that one back. We'll see how long it takes before we actually get to that topic. But there's this new game show called Paid Off, which offers a chance to eliminate student loan debt. I've not seen it yet. If you've seen it, we're going to talk about it a little bit, and then we're just going to talk about some of the best game shows ever. A little generic game show talk, game show hosts, all that fun stuff. So that's coming up. Right now, though, we're talking about fan letters. If you've ever sent a fan letter to somebody, and did they respond? Did they send anything back? A little earlier on, we read this really great story about this five-year-old kid and how his family got together and wrote a letter to every single Major League Baseball team requesting pocket calendars. And everybody responded. Some sent extra stuff and pictures and all kinds of cool stuff. Some didn't respond at all. New York Yankees. And that got us to thinking about fan letters that you wrote. And I just told the story about how I wrote a fan letter to Jamie Lee Curtis, and I got an 8x10 autographed, but it wasn't autographed by her. I found out from her years later that, in fact, it was her assistant. But then I ended up meeting her, and she kissed me, and it was all fine. It didn't matter. So I think the ultimate fan letter story that I have is this one, Dan. And I don't know if you know this one or not.
I do. I thought about it when I sent you that note. It was the story I was hoping you would tell.
This is, for those people who, you know, listen on a regular basis and know me, there's this horror film that came out in 1979 called Phantasm. There has since been four sequels, and it's been a major franchise, and the original Phantasm is one of my favorite movies of all time. When it came out in 1979, and this is no exaggeration, I saw it over 100 times in the theater, and that's not an exaggeration. That's real. That entire summer, in 1979, I saw that movie over 100 times in theaters. I would go and see it and sit through it, you know, like 2-3 times a day. So anyway, needless to say, I was a fan of the movie. The bad guy in that movie was known as the Tall Man, and it was played by an actor named Angus Scrimm. And so I was obsessed with the movie, so I wrote Angus Scrimm a note. I was probably 15 when I wrote him a letter, a fan letter. And I said, "You're the scariest dude on screen today." And I complimented and told him how many times I saw the movie. And, you know, I had just recently acquired a VCR, and I now have Phantasm on VHS, along with some other movies, and I named off some of the other movies. So I sent off this fan letter, and he sent me a nice note back, okay? And it was handwritten, and he sent me a picture, and it was him giving the tall man, the evil tall man look with the eyebrow up and the glare. And it says, "Here's looking at you, kid," and he signed it Angus Scrimm. And I was like thrilled. And I had a wall in my bedroom at the time that was dedicated to Phantasm. I had nothing but Phantasm pictures and posters and stuff. So I put his picture up, the autographed picture, and I held on to the letter, and I was thrilled. Now, cut to, this was probably 19, when I wrote that letter, probably 1980. Okay, cut to 2008. 2008. So what is that, Dan? 28 years later? Yeah, 28 years later. 28 years later, 2008, Mike and Mia have set up a Phantasm reunion for Flashback Weekend. This was in 2008. And, you know, obviously knowing what a big fan I am of the movie, I completely flipped out when I found out, because everybody was going to be there. The entire cast, writer, director, Don Coscarelli, everybody, like all the main characters, Reggie, Jody, Mike, Lady in Lavender, Tall Man, all there. And I'm freaking out. And so we decide that we're going to do a big conference interview. Okay. I'm going to have them all on a week before the convention, and we'll get everybody on and we'll talk Phantasm. So it was great. We had everybody on. We had Michael Baldwin. We had Kathy Lester, Bill Thornberry, Don Coscarelli, and Angus Scrimm. So we had them all on the line, and I was interviewing them, and it was great because Don Coscarelli, every time Don Coscarelli has ever been on the show, he quizzes me about Phantasm. He gives me a 5-question quiz about Phantasm, like the toughest questions. I've never missed a question. I just want, and he's completely, he's like, you know more about this movie than I do. And so I've never, they always try to screw me up. They always try to, you know, but I've not missed one question directly from the man who wrote and directed the movie. So that was cool enough. So then, you know, we're talking, and Angus goes, I'd like to say something, Nick. And Angus, by the way, Angus Scrimm was one of the kindest, gentlest, sweetest men that you can ever imagine. And the character of the Tall Man is so far opposite of what he really was he passed away a couple years ago, but what he really was in real life. He was an incredibly sweet man and a really awesome guy. And very, very sophisticated. He spoke well beyond my comprehension. So he's like, Nick, I'd like to speak to you for a moment. I have something to say. Now, all of a sudden he starts reading. And I begin to recognize, he's maybe 3 sentences into, he's reading something. He's like, I'd like to read something to you. And he starts reading. And I'm just listening. And then I start to recognize it. He was reading from my fan letter that I wrote to him in 1980. And he kept it. He was reading from the actual fan letter. He was holding it in his hand, the letter I wrote 28 years earlier as a kid. And I just freaked out. I was like, what is happening right now? And he's like, yes, I saved your letter. Why wouldn't I save it? It's a very special letter. And what happened was, when Don was setting up, Don Coscarelli, the director, was setting up the interview, he's like, we're going to do a conference call with a guy who hosts a radio show in Chicago named Nick DiGilio. And Angus goes, what's his name? He goes, Nick DiGilio. And he goes, could you spell that last name for me? And Don goes, D-I-G-I-L-I-O. And he goes, you know, he sent me a letter back in 1980. And I'm like, what is happening? What is going on? My head almost exploded. So Don Coscarelli, you know, finds out about this, and they all know about it. The rest of the cast knows that he's about to read from this letter. And you know, like, if you could have had a camera on my face, like, Andy, I thought I was having a stroke. Because Andy was, like, looking at me like, dude, are you okay? Because Angus Scrimm starts reading from my letter that I wrote him when I was a kid. Angus was one of those guys that kept certain letters, and he had kept mine. And dug it out, you know. And I've told this story at the convention, and, you know, the Phantasm people have come to the conventions. They've been to 2 conventions. They've been to 2014 and 2008. They were at those conventions. And I'm the one who hosts the Q&A for Phantasm because no one else is as qualified. So, and I've told that story, and it always got a great response from the crowd. And again, it made everybody endear themselves to, you know, like to Angus. Just like, look, this guy plays one of the meanest, scariest villains in horror movie history, and he saved this little 15-year-old's letter for 28 years. That's my favorite fan letter story of all time. Because it doesn't happen very often. So, Yeah, man. I mean, when he started reading from the letter, I swear to God, Dan, I was like, what is happening?
That had to be so surreal.
It was unbelievable. And they're all giggling. You know, the rest of the cast, you know. So, anyway, that's my favorite fan letter story. That's the most memorable for me. The most memorable fan letter story clearly cannot be topped. I mean, so, anyway. He was a great man, too, Angus Scrimm. And I got to know him over the course of the years. And I've got to know everybody from Phantasm, which is insane. You know, I could call Don Coscarelli up right now. Now, for me to thought that in 1979, you know, one day I will have Don Coscarelli's personal phone number, the guy who wrote and directed Phantasm. Insane. See, that's because this job is awesome. You know, like it's this job and my association with Flashback that I got to meet George. The late, great George Romero passed away yesterday. Yesterday was the 1 year anniversary of George Romero's passing, and I got to know him because of that. So anyway, Flashback is coming up in a couple of weeks. More memories will be made, I hope. All right, we got more fan letter stuff here. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. 847 area code says, I wrote a letter to then-President Ronald Reagan when I was younger. It took some time, but I did receive a letter back thanking me for my letter with a picture of him and Nancy in the White House. I remember it scared my mom because she didn't know why I was getting an envelope from the White House. What did you do wrong? Why is the White House sending letters? 331 area code says, I sent Keith Magnuson a fan letter back in the 70s. He was the best. In the 70s, I got a nice packet back, including a form letter, autographed picture, and a 7-Up decal. I still have it. P.S. I'm listening to you through the TV in the hospital awaiting gallbladder surgery tomorrow. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Good luck. I hope you're okay. Speedy recovery. 815 area code said, after we landed on the moon, my brother was really into NASA and astronauts. He wrote them all asking if they could send him moon rocks. I'm sure they just laughed, as we do now.
Quick aside, did you ever hear that moon rock story with the lady?
Which
lady? NASA?
No.
NASA accidentally put up some moon rocks for sale on their website, and she bought them, and then they realized what a big mistake that was, because you're not supposed to sell anything like that.
Yeah.
And she won the court case. The judge is like, it's on you, idiots. You know, yeah. It's like, you can't do anything about it. And then she ended up, like, so she bought it for, like, something like $2,000 or something, and ended up selling them for, like, $800,000.
Amazing. No, I never heard that story. That's crazy. All right. No moon rocks, everybody. They're not going to mail you moon rocks. All right. Let's take a break here. We got a break here for a minute, and then we'll come back. And if you have any fan letter stories that you want to share with us, it's 312-981-7200. We got a ton of texts coming in, and some phone lines are open. 312-981-7200. That's a classic Two for Tuesday song right there. That's a Two for Tuesday song you would definitely hear. Bird would play that. That's Two for Tuesday. Yeah! 312-981-7200. Paul picking sticks. That's Sweet Madam Blue. Yeah, they're epic. They're epic song about America, baby. Sticks. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're here till 5 a.m. We're going to have a little game show talk coming up. There's a new game show called Paid Off where you can get rid of your student loan debt. We're going to talk about game shows in general. But right now we're talking about your experiences with fan letters and receiving things from people that you write to and all kinds of crazy stuff. 312-981-7200. A bunch of texts here, and we'd love to hear from you. Let's see. 630 area code says, hey, Nick, I got Dave Kingman to sign a picture I cut out of the paper. My wife got Gene Kelly's autograph on a picture after writing a letter. Cool. Gene Kelly, wow. 312 area code says, I got a birthday card from Garfield Goose and the gang when I was 8 years old. Today's my birthday. The card is from 61 years ago. Wow. Do you still have it? Yeah. So, all right, Garfield Goose and the gang sent the card when they were 8. John says, I remember reading a story about an individual who wrote letters to the promotional department of each team. Not sure which pro sport it was, but there was at least one team that he never heard back. One team, though, sent him a manila envelope stuffed with swag. They even returned the self-addressed stamped envelope. I'm assuming that the one team that he never heard back won from the Yankees. That would be... Dan, would you think that...
Based, I think that's a good conclusion based upon the last hour.
414 area code says, Nick, you're talking about your teachers wanting your autograph reminded me of Adam Carolla's first appearance on Letterman. He pulled out a sheet of paper and read off names of teachers, followed by, you can kiss my ass. Letterman got a kick out of it. That's pretty funny, man. You know, there was a certain thing. You ever, like, because now, you know, I've got a really cool job and I'm, like, in the public eye and stuff. There are a couple of people in the past that I would love to tell them to kiss my ass. There was one boss at Jewel in particular. Will not say his name, but I would so love to tell him to kiss my ass right now. I would just so love that. That's funny. Peter in Decatur said, in the very early 90s, I wrote to Mystery Science Theater 3K, got a newsletter, and was put on their member list. From then on, I've received newsletters and swag. Very cool. Robert says, I suffer from a rare chromosome disease, and I had to make plans to go to California for testing. I wrote to Johnny Carson, explained my situation, and asked when we saved enough and got to California if we could check out his show. Not only did he give us tickets to the show, he bought our airline tickets. You see, Johnny Carson was the king. And I have a Johnny Carson Tonight Show, Johnny Carson pencil right here, and it's in front of me every show. And it's the two-sided eraser pencil that Johnny used to have and tap on his desk with. That's awesome. William said, back in the 80s growing up, I collected sports cards. It wasn't uncommon back then to write to players for their autographs. Of all the ones I received back, then one stood out. The one I received from Mike Singletary a year after he retired. It was on a 1986 Topps card I sent after the Super Bowl. It was autographed and had a letter. It simply stated, sorry it took so long to reply. I was kind of busy these past years. Oh, man. By the way, I'm looking up on TV, and Richard Dent is a part of some infomercial that's on right now. So I'm not sure what that means. I don't know what it is. It's the Rewind. Do we know what the Rewind is? It's on CLTV channel, and it's the Rewind. So they're talking to Richard Dent right now. And then 262 area code says, when in elementary school, I saw a commercial where you can get two album sets of Elvis songs. I wrote to them saying how I always watched Elvis movies, liked his music, and was saving my money to get these albums. They sent me the albums for free. As a kid, I thought Elvis actually mailed it to me himself, and that's what I told people. No, it was K-Tel. Feeling very generous, evidently. Here's Paul on WGN. Hi, Paul.
Hey, Nick.
Hey.
How you doing?
Good.
So when I was, this is back in the 70s, my favorite author was Richard Matheson. He wrote like a lot of famous movies, The Incredible Shrinking Man and Vincent Price, yep. Edgar Allan Poe movies and so on. Anyway, I wrote to him back then and he actually answered me. And after that, we actually corresponded a number of times over the years. And back in the late 90s, early 2000s, I was doing some freelance writing. I got to interview him over the phone.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so that was really exciting.
Yeah, that's cool. Very, very, very cool. It's cool when that kind of stuff works out. That's very special.
It really is. Yeah.
All right, Paul, thank you.
All right.
Take care.
You're welcome, Nick. Bye. Yep.
Richard on WGN. Hi, Richard.
Good morning, Nick.
Morning.
So in the 70s as well, my dad goes on this business trip, and he comes back with this wild story about how cowboys and Indians are still riding trains out there. I must have been 8 or 10. So without telling my parents, I wrote President Ford a letter. I informing him that he should know that this is going on and what can he do about it. So I didn't tell anybody. A few weeks later, we get this thick package back in the mail from Washington, from the Bureau of Indian Affairs, all about the history of the Native Americans and the Indians and what they were doing in whatever, 1976 or something. And the letter that I had written, they put that in there with the package. So we still have that
goofy
letter I wrote.
Outstanding. That is outstanding.
Right?
Yeah.
You're outstanding.
Thank you, Richard. Take care, buddy.
Good morning.
Great story. Take care. That's fantastic. He believed it so much that he wrote President Ford. That's pretty cool.
A couple quick texts. 815, our daughter made a construction paper timeline in fourth grade of Ron Santo's life in baseball. After she did, we decided to mail it to WGN Radio. He signed it and wrote her a note. It was exciting to show her teacher.
Oh, very cool.
In 1996, I was a tech support for a company made timers for turning on and off lights. Friday afternoon, a man calls, says he's an old actor who needed to know how to set the timer. He wanted to set it for his dog to eat in the morning and evening. I helped him and then asked him who he was. He said, I'm a handy helper in Green Acres. It was Sid Melton.
Oh.
He befriended me for the next hour. I told him I wanted to try comedy. He sent me jokes on a phone cassette from an answering machine to practice.
Oh, man, that is awesome. That's awesome, man. Wow. Wow, oh, great stories. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I'll tell you about this new game show called Paid Off. It's been on a few times. If you've seen it, give us a call at 312-981-7200. We're going to jump in a little game show talk as well. But the news is coming up right after this.